Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Voronis, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Krolaitis. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at our new home at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street, that great street in Chicago where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to drop us an email, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, we're going to be talking about presidential politics, as we have for several weeks now, and also some of the issues that are likely to define this presidential race. It's hard to believe that we are still well over a year away from even the nominating conventions.
Jeez.
But so much of the discussion, at least in the daily news media, is about the presidential jockeying that goes back and forth. And again, just to remind everybody, as we look at the announced Republican field, it includes Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, John Huntsman, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, and Rick Santorum. And of those who are still on the sidelines, who are likely to get in, or at least possible entries, they include Sarah Palin, Congressman Paul Ryan, Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and Rudy Giuliani, still offering some flirtation as the possible candidate and former governor, former mayor, rather, of New York City. Of that field, of the people that are in and of those who are thinking about getting in, Chris Voronis, who is our Republican tonight, with all of these people thinking of getting in, that means that they all agree on one thing. They don't like the group that's in there right now. Do you agree with them?
I think there's something to that. Entry of Rick Perry into the race certainly changes things up. I think he brings a different kind of energy to the race that other people have tapped into, but not. He's got a record that he can run on from a big state, and he's got the conservative bona fides as well. But the field hasn't settled.
Tim Krolaitis of the Tea Party, were you happy with Rick Perry's first week in the national spotlight as a potential nominee?
Yeah, I wasn't disappointed with it. I think he brings an energy into the race that wasn't there. I mean, he's got that Texas swagger and everything else. The only thing that we're looking at is there's a level of excitement about him, but there's a level of uncertainty as well because, you know, a lot of people are excited about that Texas swagger in the past as well. So.
Okay. And Dan Johnson Weinberger, look across the aisle. You certainly believe that Barack Obama is going to get reelected. I would be dumbfounded if you said anything different.
I do.
But is there anybody in here, or let me ask you, of this list, who, in your view, politically would give the president the most difficult time?
Oh, I think if Rick Perry shakes out and he doesn't end up having sort of a softer foundation than what's anticipated, I think he's the strongest candidate. You know, attractive, good-looking governor. But I think it hurts him a lot that he reminds people so much of the failed presidency of George W. that's a tough hurdle for him
way?
To overcome.
How does he remind?
Well, he's
him?
A Republican governor who's arrogant, you know, got that swagger. I mean, didn't we do that? So I think it's uncanny to have almost an identical biography and say, well, you know, remember how bad things were under Bush? Well, this like Texas governor with some real attitude, well, things are going to be different under
but
me.
But how do you respond? Because, you see, we talked about this last week after he entered the race.
Yeah.
To me, the comparison is against Ronald Reagan. Stylistically, he looks a little bit like Reagan. His speech tone is a little bit like Reagan. He's got the big hands, the big shoulders, the kind of grease-backed wavy hair. I mean, he's Reagan-esque, and also he kind of shoots from the lip a little bit, as did Reagan. And also a political.
He literally shoots.
Literally shoots. A Gatling gun from the left.
Shot rail.
Sure.
But the point is that to me is more of a comparison.
Well,
and the other point that we have to remember is the Bush family doesn't like Rick Perry. They're not friends. They went out of their way to try to knock this guy off in a re-election. So I don't know how the Democrats tag him as Bush 2 or Bush 3.
Well, think about an average voter, you know, in their 40s. You know, Reagan was 25 years ago. And I think for, you know, people like us, political junkies, I think you make an excellent point that he does kind of resemble Reagan. But for the average person, you know, we just let's assume Perry gets a nomination and it's Barack versus a Texas governor. And it's about whether you want the old George W. Bush policies or you want, you know, to go in the direction that Obama's been taking us. I think it's impossible for most people that weren't politically of age when Reagan was president to skip past W. Bush.
I want to get back to Chris as our Republican. Isn't the biggest issue is the Texas swagger of whether or not Republican moderates who live in suburban areas around the major cities that really can decide how big industrial states go, whether or not they can feel comfortable with someone who has a Texas twang and the swagger that Rick Perry has.
There's something to that. It's something that Rick Perry's going to have to contend with, but the schedule is in his favor. If he does well in Iowa and holds his own in New Hampshire, the next primary is South Carolina. So early in the primary race, he could gain momentum, serious momentum. The other thing, too, Perry is not Bush in the sense that Perry is a real Texan. Bush really never was. And also,
but
I think there's
on TV.
Yeah, everybody
bought it. He did. But also, there is a certain conservative authenticity to Rick Perry that I think people can feel. And Bush was always uncomfortable with being a conservative, even with William F. Buckley said that he's conservative but not a conservative. So there are stark differences, and I think people, especially in the primary, I think people will see that.
Yeah. Well, also, I also think about, you know, when Reagan ran, he ran against John Conley. John Conley was the former governor of Texas. He had switched parties.
Right.
He had a little bit of swagger as well, actually a great deal of swagger. And he was the darling, the early darling of the business community. He was the darling of the country club Republicans. Hmm. You know, again, the younger generation that may be listening to the show, Reagan was not the darling of the country club in 1980. He was against the country club people, and basically he went sort of over their heads, and he brought in a new type of Republican, someone that now I think resembles a Tea Party.
So he was the Tea Party of his day.
I think so, because his message was anti-Washington. But again, he was not the guy who was beloved by the corporate titans in that primary race. And you also had the party of a third party.
Yeah.
But you had a challenge in the Republican Party from John Anderson.
God bless.
Who was the moderate. He was sort of, I would say, sort of the John Huntsman of this.
It was the group. Eisenhower Republican, and the country would be far better off if my friend John Anderson was elected.
Well, but
president.
Unfortunately, the Republican primary elected didn't do that.
Close.
Anyway, I want to discuss also, by the way, if you are a Republican primary voter, I want to say that maybe that was the last time in 1980 the Republican primary voters made a good decision. Think about that. The last time they made a good decision. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, coast to coast and border to border from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Tim Carlitis, I talked about that comparison, you know, to 1980 and what's going on sort of in the body politic right now. But I basically said that maybe 1980 was the last time that Republican primary voters made a good decision.
Well, I think the excitement with Rick Perry coming in, and this would go to your point, it'd be nice to have a Republican candidate that can actually string a sentence together. When you look at W, when you look at Bob Dole, when you look at John McCain, you look at all these folks that have been up there, and then they're going against somebody like a Barack Obama and a Bill Clinton, it'd probably be helpful. So I think there's an attraction to him because he shoots from the hip, he talks straight, he's loud and proud.
But what is it? Do you agree with that statement, Chris?
Loud and proud?
Do you agree that maybe 1980 was the last time the Republican primary voters made a really good decision? That doesn't mean that somebody won, but again, if you go back to 2000, was George Bush a better candidate than John McCain in 1980?
I think, to your question, I think the Illinois voters did make the right decision. And I think the 8 years that followed proved that. And history in the rearview mirror proves that. To Tim's point, Rick Perry may be able to string together, and I say this as, you know, someone who's interested in Rick Perry. He may string a sentence together, but what he chooses to string together, you know, may not go over so well. A little clumsy this week. He looked a little unpresidential. First week.
No one's going to remember any of those mistakes.
I don't think it's fatal.
You know, we've been recording them all.
Right? Dan's tattooed that into his arm. Yeah. It's not fatal.
What's the big mistake? The
treasonous comment about printing money. Okay. Not fatal, but at the end of the day, I think it may reinforce a negative perception of the Texas, the Texan with swagger, that he may not want reinforced.
As he's running against a president that basically said, let's bring a gun to a knife fight.
So it flies both ways,
I
don't disagree with you.
Right.
But I'm just saying, you know, he's got a certain image he's got to combat if he wants to look like the most presidential Republican candidate.
Dan.
I'll respond to your 1980 comment. I think that was the time when all the Eisenhower Republicans were essentially run out of the Republican Party. And
no, that was 64.
No, fair enough. That was the they got the rest of them out. So picking Ronald Reagan over John Anderson, I think, was the worst decision the Republican primary voters ever made. And the issue was
they picked him over George Bush.
Mm-hmm. John Anderson came in second in the race,
but John Anderson was not.
George Bush would have been
a major factor.
He was a significant factor early on. He came in second in Illinois. He won Northern Illinois. State. That's right. Won Northern Illinois.
But Bush was the.
Yeah, George Bush would have been better. George Bush was a much better president than Ronald Reagan.
Oh,
absolutely.
Show of hands on that one.
Yeah, right. I'll say, you know, you balance a budget, right? You balance a budget.
You had a two-term president against a one-term president?
Well, from the perspective of raising the standard of living of ordinary Americans, when you balance a budget, you bring peace and prosperity. George Bush was a better president than Ronald Reagan.
Invading a country and raising taxes was
Ronald Reagan's worst political decision. He should have picked somebody stronger. Who should have picked Jack Kemp? Is his running mate. Hey, yeah, we're going way back.
Yeah, we are.
Political history here, but again, the reason why I think this is important is I think there are some similarities here. Mm-hmm. I think there's similarities with what the Tea Party, right? The Tea Party is to this campaign what the Goldwater rights and the Goldwater fervor was in 1964, and it's also basically what Ross Perot had going in 1992. We call it a different movement, but to me, their success as a movement has been demonstrated far more successful now than when you compare it with the other movements. And I'm just saying that is a movement right now where you've got Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul. I guess a concern that I would have for you, a Mr. Tea Party guy, Tim, a Mr. Tea Party guy.
All right.
Yeah, sure. Right.
You won that. It was a swimsuit competition that got it right. Michelle Bachmann finished first. Ron Paul finished second in Iowa. I will say right now, and we're going to get tons of calls from the Ron Paul people, neither one of those people is going to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Now, and the majority of people in Iowa voted against the one guy, at least in that field, who was most likely to make it all the way, and that's Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. because the same people, the same mindset that selected John McCain 4 years ago, or Bob Dole before that, that mindset we'll give it to the guy that's already run, who is the grown-up in the field, mm-hmm. who's paid his dues. Republicans love people who pay dues. And that is Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. That's why he has a leg up, unless some guy is going to come flying out of right field.
And he did last week. There you go.
Rick
Perry did last week. And here's the interesting thing about this. You know, we talk about how in the Republican field, normally it's the next in line. What I think is starting to occur, we talked about the different wings of the Republican Party. When you start to look at a Palin that might jump in and a Ryan that might jump in and a Mitt Romney and a Bachmann and a Ron Paul, you basically have all the differences right there in one line. We don't see this quite often. So now that you have it and you have good, solid representation for each faction, So this is going to be an interesting.
Well, Palin also represents. She ran before.
Mm-hmm.
She has the name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want Sarah Palin to enter this race?
I think it would be healthy to have her in this race.
Can I raise?
Would she be your candidate?
Possibly.
Come on.
Why would she not be?
Well, we have to look, you know, I mean, we have to see how she plays out within the structure of the political structure, because the reality is she's a good activist, but we need to see more of what she needs to do and some of the programs and things that she's been avoiding being an activist, okay? Because it's one thing, as a Tea Partier, say it's one thing to be an activist, and it's another thing to be in governance. And we're seeing that right now where the president was great at being an activist, but is awful.
But when look at the field, would you say that it's a correct analysis to say that based on your Tea Party friends, they're going to vote in this field, if Sarah Palin gets in the field, they're going to either vote, their choice would be, not necessarily in this order, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, mm-hmm. Ron Paul, mm-hmm. or Rick Perry. Most Tea Party people are going to go into one of those areas.
I would agree with you, yes.
Okay. All right. So now, if the Tea Party, this powerful force within the party, if they're going in four different directions,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and I'm Mitt Romney, I agree.
Why do you think
I agree
sitting
with that,
back
Bruce.
And say, you know what? Come on in.
Perry's
why
entry.
Do you think Paul Ryan is eyeballing this thing now?
Perry,
because I think he may be
he
thinking
sees
exactly
what you see.
What I see.
Exactly.
I think Mitt Romney, when he saw Rick Perry enter the race, had a big smile on his face. Because what you have here, if this plays out, it's very early.
Right.
If this plays out, we know a few things. Bachmann's shown some early resonance. She's the Tea Party favorite right now.
She played well in the state where she was born and spent a lot of time.
She looks
good on TV.
In a straw poll.
So Ron Paul has proven he can raise money. Rick Perry is probably the most electable conservative in that primary field right now. And what you have, if this plays out, if the three stay in the race, you'll have three candidates eating each other's bases, allowing Mitt Romney to walk right through.
But what about Huntsman?
Doesn't
he? I mean, look, if the Romney base are, you know, corporate America and sort of, right, in like the establishment sort of country club Republicans, if that's the Romney base, then isn't Huntsman playing to that field as well?
Yes, but I think that field is – the Huntsman positions, especially on social issues, I think is so small within the Republican Party, I don't think that gets divided equally.
Right.
I think the Tea Party group, they could divide equally amongst those four.
I'll tell you one.
And again, the people that are not going to give up to the bitter end are going to be the Ron Paul people.
They are going
to be the most loyal. Right. They will do well in all the polls.
Yep.
But, you know, the reality is, Ron Paul is not going to be the Republican nominee. Yesterday was his birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday.
76 years old.
Bruce, could this be the year we finally see a brokered convention?
I don't think so.
That'd be fun.
I don't think so. By the way, there was a mention of what the field looks like, or what the schedule looks like. Let's take a quick look at the Republican primary field for next year, or at least the schedule of either the primaries or the caucuses. This is in February. On the 6th, you've got Iowa. The very next day, you've got a caucus in Minnesota, Missouri, and New Jersey. And then you have, on the 14th, Valentine's Day, you've got New Hampshire. Then Nevada on the 18th. Wisconsin could be a big one on the 21st. That could be really a big one, which may be one of the reasons why Paul Ryan may be thinking, seeing the way that Wisconsin has been front-loaded here. And then the traditional, this is where literally the field has always narrowed, and that is South Carolina on the 28th of the month. And then we're going to get into the March things in just in our next month, but we're going to hold off on that. Paul Ryan, your reaction to Paul Ryan getting into the race? Knowing that Wisconsin is in the first month, is that what he's thinking about?
Maybe that's playing into it. Paul Ryan, out of all the candidates out there, probably looks the most like Ronald Reagan in terms of energy and ideas, and a true conservative Republican. I just
philosophically. Okay, not stylistically, but...
Not stylistically, no.
Right.
I just happen to think that I don't think he'll get in.
Okay. Do you want him to get in?
Yeah, I think
you
it'd
think
be
more the merrier.
Yeah, I really do.
All right, now from the Tea Party people, if he got in, is he splitting it now five ways? Does he make
it more
likely? I
don't necessarily
think so. Or do people peel away from some of those other candidates and go to him?
I think he brings the debate. He there's a lot of things that he can bring further in the debate.
He defines debate. 1-800-723-8289. We will define our debate with callers when we come back. From Elkton, Ohio to Elkhart, Indiana, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Thanks for joining us tonight. Dan Johnson Weinberger is here. He is an attorney. He is also a progressive lobbyist, and he is also a student of the President of the United States in that he was your law professor.
And yes, he was.
University of Chicago. Chris Veronis also joins us. He is with ASOP Communications. And that is a new company created for you, and your job there is to get good publicity for all your clients.
Indeed.
Keep them either in the press or out of the press.
Either or.
What do you...
And paying.
And paying in advance. Yeah. And you have no political clients?
Not at the moment.
By design?
It's early.
So you would take a political client?
I would.
If they pay up front?
Yes.
And Tim Krolaitis also joins us. He is a leader of the Tea Party. There are many leaders of the Tea Party. For those people around the country and for those people around Illinois, because no one wants to be the singular leader of the Tea Party,
right.
Define your leadership, your sphere of influence.
I deal with primarily out of Will County. Actually, the president of Will
Western
County.
Western rural Illinois.
Yes. And then also Joliet, which is a city that, in that same area. And then I'm on the board of the Illinois Tax Day Tea Party. .com, which is a review of different Tea Parties that operate and communicate throughout the state.
And when you are not being a Tea Party guy, you are in the world of business. And
construction,
what do you do?
Consultant, and, as far as an industrial distribution.
Is there much consulting to do with so little
construction? It's tough right now. We seem to be doing more outside the state than in the state, so...
Jim in South Elgin joins us. He's listening to us on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
A lot of companies that leave Illinois because of the way it's run, which is part of the problem. The president race with Romney and Huntsman, to some degree, isn't enthusiastic at all because they've subscribed to the fraud and hoax of global warming. You know, I always tell my liberal friends that they want to reduce their carbon footprint just to quit breathing. The whole entire notion of all this climate change is garbage. You look at these, like, CFC light bulbs, for example, that they sell in the stores, and on the label it says, you know, they're all made with mercury. So what's going to happen when people throw them away? And yet you've got the EPA suing the coal companies for the mercury emissions.
Jim, well, you know what? I'm interrupting. We're getting a real bad phone call. I'm not cutting you off because of the content of your call. I'm cutting it off because of the technical quality. He was basically talking about global warming and environmental issues. Do you think they will have much traction in the primary race?
Well, Huntsman was pretty aggressive about picking his fights. We talked about global warming a lot on this week, this morning. I don't know if that's a winning issue for Republicans seeking a nomination in the primary process. It underscores how and why he's a marginal candidate. These aren't winning issues in the Republican primary, and
he's for civil unions,
and he's for civil unions, and he's aligned to Obama as much as he's trying to run away from Obama. And if there is a moderate candidate at all, it's Mitt Romney.
Go ahead.
First, the caller largely propagated a myth that companies are leaving Illinois. In fact, we're the highest job growth in the Midwest. But second, what I find fascinating is that, Huntsman's tweet that, I listen to scientists when it comes to global warming, call me crazy, is the most retweeted of any Republican presidential candidate's tweet. And I think it speaks to a constituency that we Democrats have basically claimed, which are people that used to think of themselves as moderate Republicans, but have come over because of this virulently anti-science wing of the party, which is dominant in the Republican field. So I think it's an interesting play where it doesn't play well in the Republican field to listen to what scientists say. It plays to say, like, well, they're all full of it. I'm against global warming. So what is a majority issue in November is a marginal issue in the primary. So, that's a weakness of the Republican field.
John Huntsman, that's not the goal now.
If John Huntsman wants to be right instead of president, he'll win. He'll be right. But the point is, you cannot win a Republican primary process.
Telling the truth. Right, that's the interesting part, which I think is a weakness of the Republican field. You can't tell the truth about what scientists say about global warming and win a Republican primary. That's great for us.
So you and Al Gore believe in that truth. That's about it, brother.
Yeah, the majority.
Well, it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, right? A majority of people
don't say that science. There's a debate.
Well,
don't tell me the debate's over.
On a purely political level,
right.
No Republican candidate
can 2%.
Win the primaries on an issue like global warming.
And also, again, the position on social issues. That is, his position on social issues is not an issue that's going to do well in Republican primaries.
Right.
It will do well, I think, in a general election. I think the vast or a large percentage of people are moving in his direction on issues of civil unions.
That's right.
But it's not going to play well, at least in the early primary states.
It's
not going to play well in South Carolina.
No, you're right.
Or in Iowa.
You're right.
It might play well in New Hampshire because there are civil unions.
So on a purely political point, to follow up what Chris was saying, what plays well in a Republican primary makes you look like a Neanderthal in November when the majority of people vote. That's a structural problem Republicans face.
That's if the people who are voting in the general election are either single-focused voters that are really concerned about that particular issue. Because
there may
be people who may disagree with a position on global warming, but if they like that positions on the economy or on jobs or on something else or issues of strength and character and some of the other things that people really vote on, like likability, they will look the other way.
Civil
because
union.
You know what? When Ronald Reagan ran for re-election in 1984, he won overwhelmingly, landslide. But yet on specific issues, when people were questioned, many of them disagreed with Ronald Reagan. So they disagreed with the president, and yet they voted for him because there were other issues, strength, peace, other things.
But it's hard, and
they also appreciated where that they knew
where he stood
on the issues.
Yes.
But that led to 84.
I think that was one thing that John Huntsman said in the debate from Iowa. I mean, he gave his position on civil unions. He knew it was not popular in that hall.
Right.
It was not popular with probably the vast majority of people watching on Fox News Channel. But he stood up. He was a man for conviction. He said what he wanted. Yeah. Frankly, I admire people who don't back away from their positions.
Yeah.
Even though
Huntsman
I may agree
has
or disagree
other
with
challenges
him.
Than whether he's for civil unions or global warming, he's the Mormon you don't know. And I think if
that
people...
sounds like a book title to me. Mormon you don't know.
You do have a Mormon you know and a Mormon you don't know. And I think given the choice, people would go with the Mormon you know.
Let's go to Kent, listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to make a point. The last time I remember an election of this magnitude was, and I kind of remember it vaguely, was Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. And the reason, you know, that I make that comparison was because of how desperate the situation is right now in this country. And for anybody to not recognize how bad off people are with unemployment, really don't understand, you know, what's going on in this country. And I absolutely emphatically believe that all this stuff about whether a swagger about this or that, none of that's going to matter. Barack Obama is by far the worst president of all of our lifetime, and he is going to get massacred in the next election. And I believe liberals are just going to be, they're going to be thrown up over it because it's going to be such a dramatic election that it'll politically change the landscape for the next 20 years.
Dan Johnson Weinberger disagrees, and he's going to tell us why.
Those are pretty bold words of another realignment election. I don't think there's any evidence. Anybody that can make any prediction like that a year and a half out has a crystal ball that they ought to make a lot more money selling. But no, I think particularly with the House going Republican and the stark choice, and with the Republican primary field pulling people to take, you know, anti-gay bigoted positions, anti-science, it helps Barack's reelection choices tremendously, which is tough in a period when there's high unemployment. It's tough, but it helps.
You know, we're talking about the Republican field here, and I think the economy, if anything else, levels the playing field between the strongest Republican candidates, the one who will emerge with the nomination, Barack Obama. These last 2 to 3 weeks have been horrific for Barack Obama, starting with the negotiations where he just came off whining. Can the Republicans say yes to anything? Now he's at this point where he's explaining or maybe blaming the tsunami or the Arab Spring for these problems, and now he's on vacation. These last 3 weeks have really taken a toll, and you see it in the Gallup poll rating, the lowest level in terms of presidential approval
Republican
for Barack Obama.
Presidents go on vacation, too. Why?
Yeah, and
why is the news media, and why, at least, I think it's more of the news media than the people. Why are they so obsessed with
They are fixated
vacations?
On it, aren't they?
We haven't had a credit downgrade
in
a while,
last time I checked.
They are
fixated on it.
We haven't had 9.1% unemployment.
I mean, honestly,
I want my vacation rested.
Yeah. You know what?
Arrest the president.
People should take.
I haven't seen a president more rested than this guy, period.
Come on.
I mean, if he's not going he had 33 fundraisers.
That's where Democrats
33 fundraisers in 2.5 months. How many times did he golf? And then he turned around. He didn't have a plan when we were talking, when the debate was going on just 3 months ago. And he still doesn't have a jobs plan. He's going to get to that in September.
It's going to be after Labor Day. He's working on it.
While he's on his lazy boy.
We have a phenomenal jobs plan, but unfortunately the wrong party's running the House. We don't have a king.
1-800-7-3-8-2-8-2-8.
Show it to us. We're still waiting.
Have you ever been to Martha's Vineyard?
I've never been.
Oh, yeah. I took my Learjet there.
I got to tell you. My favorite place to go on vacation, I'll tell you. Great.
Well, let's go.
Criticize Martha.
Let's
back
do
shortly in Chicago. You've really changed that. The president should go to Branson.
Branson. Yeah. Tony Orlando.
Yeah, that's a good
idea.
We're just talking about other places where the president could go.
That's right.
Nobody here has been to Martha's Vineyard.
Just you.
No.
Except me. Martha's Vineyard is beautiful.
I'd like to.
And by the way, you don't sit around and talk politics all the time in Martha's Vineyard. I mean, I consider myself somewhat as a conservative, moderate conservative. You know, I'm originally from New England, so I love New England. But
you don't
Martha's
think he's
Vineyard
shaking down
really
donors?
Nice. It's really nice.
It's a beautiful. Nice. And you know what? The American.
Not Brenda Branson. I mean.
Oh, I've been to Branson.
We spend, as a country, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, the news media, it's a cyclical, it's the July-August story. It's complaining about where the president is, fill in the name, where he's going on vacation. Does he spend too much vacation time?
And I
want my president rested.
And I think
you have facts.
I have facts, actually.
Here's a bulletin. Facts are being injected into this conversation.
Watch out. It's a CBS News, August 19th.
Oh, CBS
forget
News.
It.
All right, I'll go. You want me to scroll somewhere else?
Those communists.
Right. The score at this point, Obama 70, Bush 225. According to CBS News.
Well, he was president for 8 years.
No, up to this point in their presidency.
225 days
That's
on vacation?
That's what CBS News said. As I read it, I'll go to factcheck.org.
We'll see.
But I will say, you know what's interesting?
That may be a little excessive.
Yeah, Google it, folks.
Yeah, but what's interesting.
But again, he was still president.
Yeah.
Bush with a little, nuclear code was still, right next to him.
Yeah, and I will say, on a fact check, has President Obama taken more vacation time than his predecessors? According to one count, Presidents Reagan, Bush, and George W. Bush spent more time on vacation during their first year than President Obama did.
Okay, I don't care. Let's go to Whiting, Indiana. Lee on WLS Radio, Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
How you doing, guys?
Okay.
I'm not a Tea Party member, and I'm really don't really necessarily believe in everything Ron Paul ascribes to. But it seems to me like the media is sort of schizophrenic where, you know, they decry the direction of the country and where our leadership's been for the last couple of decades. But yet, the first time an alternative candidate comes along, the first thing they try to do is poison the well by saying he can't win. I mean, I can't even remember one conversation I've heard in the media this last election cycle concerning Ron Paul where it wasn't finished up with the phrase that he can't win. You know, and I'm not necessarily talking about Ron Paul so much, but people like him. You know, people that have a different viewpoint or maybe think that we should go in a different direction. Unless they're an establishment candidate and you know, just prescribed to the party line and are another just a political animal, it seems like the media does everything they can to try to beat them down and make sure that we don't have an alternative to what we've been getting for 20 years.
I disagree. I don't think the media beats him down. But here is a fact. Ron Paul has run for president several times. Mm-hmm. He's run for president as an independent. He's run for the Republican nomination last time and is running again this time. He is in the debates. He usually does very well in the debates. I thought the biggest applause line when he debated in Iowa, 10 days ago, was when he talked about the militarism of our U.S. foreign policy. Mm-hmm. I think there is a strain of whether you want to talk about isolationism, whatever it is, there is a strain of voters in the Republican Party who do not like our military adventurism. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I would like to see more of a debate on that subject mm-hmm. by having other Republicans talk about it, because I think it conservatively represents maybe 20% of the Republican primary electorate. And if you looked at it, you know, in the general election, it would probably represent maybe 40 or 45% yeah. of the electorate.
Yeah.
So I think there's popularity and there's currency in that.
Right.
Okay, but then comes along a straw poll or a caucus or mm-hmm. a primary, and any Republican who has heard him articulate, because he's in all the debates, all the quick pop polls that all the cable networks do, always show that he does well.
Not allowed in the debates the last time around?
He was involved in a significant number of debates.
Okay.
Ron Paul or his supporters should never say that Ron Paul has not had an opportunity to make his case to Republican primary
sure.
voters.
Then
the voters vote. And you know what?
Right.
He doesn't.
Ron Paul is. I'm not necessarily talking about a Ron Paul. I'm talking about an alternative candidate. Ron Paul is just an example.
Well, the alternative candidate is Gary Johnson,
the former governor
of New Mexico, who favors legalized marijuana.
Right. I mean, that's sort of a fringe issue. But the thing is, they do this. It seems like this goes on with every candidate that doesn't stick to 100% of the party line. I mean, we keep putting the same people in office, and we keep wondering why we get the same thing over
and
over
again.
I
think Ron Paul is, he has given some credibility because he's an elected official.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that Ron Paul and his positions do not have an opportunity to gain majoritarian positions in Republican primaries is not true, because all he's got to do is to get 51% of the people in a vote to vote for him.
Well, my point is that the media does everything they can to toss the guy a boat anchor. They poison the well, and as far as the electorate is concerned,
how do they poison the well against Ron Paul?
Every time the person is mentioned in conversation, the conversation is always finished up with the phrase that the man can't win. I mean, this happens with every alternative candidate. And yet we put these political hacks in. You got a rhino like Rick Perry, who, if I remember right, used to be Al Gore's campaign manager down here in Texas.
A Democrat.
And now he's a Republican, of
he
course.
Does, look, they...
And yet, yeah, these guys, I mean, they
caller,
go into
the caller's right.
country clubs. You're getting
no,
the same
Reagan
thing over and over.
No, the caller's right about the fact that Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann have this epithet. They can't win. Right? And that's sort of commonly applied to them, and that's probably not fair.
All right. I don't think we said it tonight.
No. I think it's as Sarah Palin would say, the lamestream media.
All I want is I want to see a primary or a caucus where Ron Paul finishes first and picks up all the marbles.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's fair.
1-800-723-8289. We have another full hour if you're watching us or listening to us on radio. If you're watching us on television, you won't see the second hour, but we'll be back next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Voronis, Democrat Dan Johnson-Weinberger, and Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Krolaitis. Program coming to you from our home base at the brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago on State Street, that great street. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And by the way, since we last... We're together last week. I did the show from WL, the Big 57 in Youngstown, Ohio, WKBN. And it's been a couple of weeks since I've been here. But since that time, for those listening around the country and have been listening to the story of the ongoing efforts to build the new Museum of Broadcast Communications, all of our exterior work is now done. The beautiful north facade of the building is complete. All the lights, exterior lights are on. And if awesome. You're driving by the museum at State and Kinsey, especially at night, it looks spectacular.
Congratulations.
And we will soon be... opening later this year, we will be opening and having some operational activities for people to come into the museum. But again, that's the ongoing saga, sometimes a tragedy, of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We have been talking about Republican presidential politics. We've been going through the field and also asking whether or not it is likely that other candidates will jump into that field. Clearly, the field at the moment, obviously, with Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, Rick Perry, John Huntsman, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, and Rick Santorum. The new possibles, Sarah Palin, of course. She came out with a video this week. If you've not seen the video, go to her website, because anyone who questions whether that's a campaign video, that's a campaign video like I've never seen one. Congressman Paul Ryan allegedly is flirting with the idea. Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, is thinking about it. And Rudy Giuliani has not totally ruled it out. But I don't think there's any traction for Rudy Giuliani. Do you at this moment in time,
Ms. Voronis? I don't. You know, to a large degree, I think Mitt Romney has cornered his constituency. You know, we are coming on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. Rudy Giuliani becomes very relevant then. But out of all the rumblings, you hear the faintest cry for Giuliani.
Who is out there? I mean, the fact that the national media, in fact, most of the Sunday shows today, we're talking about some of these possible entrants. Who would be the power forces, since a lot of the power forces are already associated with existing candidates, who would be the power forces that are out there that are trying to encourage a Chris Christie or a Paul Ryan or a Sarah Palin to get in this race?
You're saying who would be encouraging them?
Yeah, who do you think would be doing it? Is it? I'm going to just offer one suggestion. Could it be the Bush family? Could it be Karl Rove and the Bush, because they don't like and they're not big fans of Rick Perry? Could they be looking for someone to derail Rick Perry?
There could be something to that. A guy like Chris Christie, though, stands on his own merits. Arguably, even though he's been in office for 2 years, arguably he's got more powerful celebrity status than Rick Perry, who's been in office for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The field has not settled yet on the GOP side, but time's running out, and money is going to certain candidates, and it behooves people to make up their minds right away.
Karl Rove, by the way, was on TV today. He said, "I'm not much of a gambler, but I'd have to put more money that she, Sarah Palin, gets in this than she doesn't, because the schedule she has next week in Iowa looks like that of a candidate, not a celebrity. If she doesn't get in next week, I think people are going to basically say she's not in, she won't be in, and if she gets in, I'm not going to be for her. You can only tease so many times in the political process or in the game of life. That's my editorial comment. And I think she's getting to the end of that. Your points on Chris Christie.
I don't know if Bush would encourage him, because I feel Chris Christie, being from the Northeast, would probably draw away from Romney's base just as much as some of the conservative base. So I really don't know as far as what the establishment would be pushing, being in.
What's the relationship between Chris Christie and the Tea Party movement?
I think people, there's an attraction to Chris Christie. First of all, his willingness to go head to head with the teachers' unions and some organizations that have been longstanding, and his success record in New Jersey at actually cutting some things. And you know, part of the Tea Party system is fiscal conservatives, traditional conservatives, and then libertarians. So he would attract that fiscal conservative group.
And he's robust.
Yeah.
And a lot of people
are looking for people to fight. I mean, people are looking for fighting.
And also the national news media, which tends to encourage people to run, as they certainly did with Rudy Giuliani. Many of those media people live in New Jersey.
They do. What I thought was kind of extraordinary over the last couple of weeks is that the Tea Party got their first victory of the season in that Congresswoman Bachman of Minnesota knocked out former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, who was, you know, a governor, former governor, you know, reasonable candidate, you'd think, but this sort of insurgent force, you know, not a successful congresswoman, but a representative of the Tea Party movement, you know, I'm against the debt ceiling, you know, burn down the establishment kind of voice. She won. And the result of that is what you would think of to be a pretty strong candidate. Minnesota, potentially a swing state in play, right? That would be a good thing for the ticket. He's gone. So I think you got to chalk that up as a Tea Party victory early.
It was a Tea Party victory. And what I'm hearing from Dan is confusion about why this happened. And apparently still lingering confusion over how the Tea Party could pick up 70-plus seats in the midterm election. It's a formidable force. It's here to stay. People don't like it. And people, liberals, progressives, have got to figure out how to deal with it.
Do you think, again, you know, you spent more time probably managing campaigns than anybody at the table, Dan, or being involved in the intricacies of a campaign. Do you think it's too late for a candidate to get in a race and define a field or become a serious candidate? Do you think it's too late for Sarah Palin?
I don't think so. I think Sarah Palin can go later than anyone. I think because the Republican field is so wide open and so variable, I don't sense consolidation around Rick Perry like I thought may have happened. I don't see anyone else dropping out. So I think because things are so wide open, it's not too late.
Let's go to Jeff in Waco, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. It's one comment. We want to win on the Republican side. And as much as I admire Herman Cain's ideas, as much as I admire some of Ron Paul's ideas, even Michelle Fox's ideas, I hate to break the news to everybody, because I saw Obama in action in 2008. I'll be honest, I'm a Republican all my life. I voted for McCain, but I was captivated by the guy. His speaking, his oratory, his articulation. Mm-hmm. Can't underestimate. We have to find a candidate that can win. And I can tell you, the only candidate or non-candidate I've actually heard captivated me when he spoke was Christie out of New Jersey. The way he handled that teacher's union came straight to the point. We need somebody to connect to voters. And unfortunately, the playing field we got there, Sarah Palin, great celebrity, great rallier.
Jeff, let me stop you for a moment. I'm going to put you on hold, because when we come back, you're calling from Waco, Texas. When we come back, I want you to tell us why you don't have Rick Perry at the top of that list. I want to hear it directly from a Texan, and we'll do that when we come back from Chicago. From Boise, Idaho to La Crosse, Wisconsin, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great terrestrial radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. Jeff is on the line listening to us on KLBJ out of Waco, Texas. And before the break, he was saying that singing the praises of Chris Christie, and I asked the question before the break, since much of the political community is now talking about Rick Perry, why do you not put Rick Perry at the top of your winnable list, Jeff?
Well, that's a good question. The answer is I'm a two reasons. Number one, I'm a 51-year-old male who's been around a while. I don't wake up in the middle of my 40s and just switch my beliefs. The fact that Governor Perry was a member of the Democratic Party during a large portion of his career, when the Democratic Party resembled the Democratic Party, as it does today, unlike when Reagan switched when he was a Democrat, the different Democratic Party. I believe he switched for expediency rather than core beliefs, number one. Number two, every day I walk outside, I see illegal immigrants building houses outside my home. They're everywhere. Done nothing to help solve that issue or enforce any of the existing laws we have in this state. So those are the two main reasons.
Well, listen, let's follow up on that particular point, because at least in one of the stories that I read last week about Rick Perry was that he got 37% of the Hispanic vote, which, again, is very impressive. But what I'm hearing you say and others have said in previous calls from Texas is that he's looked the other way on that issue. And within a Republican primary, that's a hot button issue, even though nobody wants to talk about it. Tim?
Yeah,
would you agree
I
with that?
He has looked the other way.
Yeah, I think that's why people are still considering Perry. I think it's important. You know, I think recently his statement was, let's secure the borders before we even have that next discussion. And that's a way of saying we don't want to have that discussion.
We've had record deportations. Like, there have been more deportations under President Obama than President Bush. You know, the advocates for, legalization are very unhappy with the president. Why aren't the sort of anti-immigrant folks happier with President Obama?
Because they can't give any credit where credit might be due. And, again, I've been a longtime critic of that particular issue.
Yeah.
But you're right. What's been going on? Is it perfect? Are there people still sneaking into the country as we speak tonight? You betcha. But has there been a significant increase in prosecutions? Absolutely.
It's the biggest ever. And the advocates are furious at President Obama.
But it's never enough.
Right.
It never can be enough. And what I'm just saying is, you know, when you look at a Republican who gets 37% of the vote, of the Hispanic vote, that to me means that he's not working on that issue, or he is so comfortable in talking about the issue that Hispanics go just beyond that issue, and they think that Rick Perry has been a good governor. And also, what about the issue of changing? Jeff also talked about that. Does that worry you that he flip-flopped from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party basically in contemporary political times?
Yeah. Well, the caller, if it comes down to a debate on intentions, I don't know how I still think Rick Perry wins. He will have to explain himself. But at the end of the day, I think conservative primary voters could look at Rick Perry and believe that he's a true conservative. He was a conservative Democrat.
Let's go to Jerry listening to us in Redding, California on KQMS. Nice to hear from Northern California tonight.
I think it's still nice and warm here.
Good. Nice and warm here, too.
Yeah, oh, boy. And I'm going to agree with you and your recent caller saying, I want a Republican candidate who is in to win, not just to make some radical statements and fail. And, for instance, on Rick Perry and perhaps the others, they'll often come out and say, oh, I'm against abortion. Well, I heard Billy Graham himself say on television that it should be, you know, not allowed except in the case of rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother. And to go in another direction, we're going to lose enough votes that we'll never get elected. And then secondly, Rick Perry steps up and says, oh, I think this global warming is all political, et cetera, when an intelligent person would say, Yes, the polar caps are shrinking. We have some problems there, and we don't know how much of it is man-caused, but I'm at least open to information coming in. For instance, I can remember when they talked about the ozone hole, you know, the hole in the ozone because of the chlorofluorocarbons. They straightened that out. They've made an improvement, and it, we could say, well, there have been some real improvements. And here in California, they have really restricted exhaust emissions. And I'd gone to college in San Jose, and we used to never see the sun. It was so, you know, so much pollution in the air.
Jerry,
and it's been cleaned up.
Do you have you're making a case, sort of what Dan was suggesting, is that there can be in the Republican Party, and I do believe there is a significant number of people in the Republican Party who do believe in global warming, who do believe in some of the issues that maybe the base or the perceived base of the party does not believe in. I'm talking about even civil unions, a choice for women when it comes to abortion. They used to be called moderates. Now they're called liberals in the Republican Party. My question to you is, in the rest of that field, you painted a case that Rick Perry doesn't seem to be your guy. Who best speaks for you in the current field, or who's in the on-deck circle that you would like to entice into the race?
At this point, I if I were to cast a vote, it would certainly be for Romney. I would hope you'd pick a good, strong VP candidate so that, you know, some strength could be put there and not just pick someone we've never heard of so that it would just be a one-person issue. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I want a candidate who's going to get out there and try to get, as you say, 50% of the votes plus a vote. And I'd like to come through with a win. I've been a registered Republican since I turned 21 in 1959, and I have followed elections and followed them closely, and I have been very involved, and I just really hope we can pull out a win in this coming election.
Okay, listen, thank you for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's go to Dave, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. He thinks Ron Paul is electable. Why?
Yes. Well, look, first of all, I don't agree totally with Ron Paul, so I think if you disagree with him on positions, you should say so. However, it's just not empirically in line with facts to say that he can't win. He's been winning most of the straw polls that matter. He's been raising the money. He's been winning the debates. He was neck and neck. He tied in Iowa.
What is the straw poll that matters?
Iowa straw poll, he tied effectively with Michelle Bachmann in Iowa. No one's saying that. He won New Hampshire. Last year, he was neck and neck against Obama. Rasmussen poll put him neck and neck against Obama. So it's empirically false to say that he can't win. This year, he pulled a little bit lower than Obama, but he's still within striking distance. So I think the claim that he can't win is sort of going with this country club Republican propaganda. And to claim that the clear front runner is not the front runner is basically asking people to negatively hallucinate reality.
Well,
the fact is that this guy is winning.
All right, let me ask you one thing.
Okay.
And so, like,
it depends what the definition of win is.
Yes. Yeah, so Eric Zorn of the Tribune wrote a good piece on this and said the question to Ron Paul supporters is, you know, what is his path to victory, given that he never won a primary or a caucus in 08 or 04 or 00, which primary or caucus do you see him winning?
I'm not sure. I know that he won New Hampshire. I know that he placed
When did he win New Hampshire? Did I miss that? When did he win in New Hampshire?
He didn't win
in New Hampshire.
The New Hampshire straw poll.
No, but here's the point. Here's the point. Straw polls don't count. Straw polls may give you a headline. It may give you the first paragraph, the second paragraph in a news story. They don't mean anything.
I disagree. Okay. Straw polls are people.
My question to you is, what shift of power takes place because of one's position in a straw poll.
Once what shift of power, that means that the people are behind you. Maybe the liberal media aren't behind you. Maybe the Republican Country Club is not behind you. But the only poll that matters is when I go in the voting booth on voting day, I pull the lever, I punch the I punch the ticket.
So why didn't Ron Paul then, if Ron Paul 4 years ago did well in any one of the straw polls in any one of the states you've stated, and he didn't win New Hampshire, by the way.
Sir, let's talk about
the
right
question
now,
is where did he win? Where did he win?
This is 2011. He's winning in 2011.
All right.
All right, good. All right. Well, let's find out. You know what? Let's find out. And by the way, we have invited Ron Paul, just to let you know, we have invited Ron Paul and Dan Dorfman, who is our call screener here. I'm going to put this on the top of his list of things to do in the next couple of weeks. I want to get Ron Paul as a guest on this program. I'm going to give him 1 hour or 2 hours or 20 minutes, whatever he wants. I'll give national radio exposure to Ron Paul, and I'm going to mention it every single week until Ron Paul shows up, because we've asked Ron Paul in the past, and he never cared enough to take the time to do it. So we're going to ask him again. So if you are a Ron Paul supporter, wherever you're listening within the sound of my voice,
the Ron Paul Nation,
go to the Ron Paul website and contact them and tell them to get Ron Paul with Bruce Dumont. Doesn't make any sense. We are back in Chicago. We were just talking about something during the break. We talked a little bit about illegal immigration, and that was that if you are an illegal immigrant and you commit a crime, at least a federal crime, you go to a federal prison. You serve time in a federal prison. You are paid for by U.S. tax dollars. And the day that you have served your time, you are deported back to where you came from. Now, my question is, if you have, and by the way, this is for a crime that is not, it is not the crime of illegally entering the country.
Yeah.
It is, they have committed a crime. My point would be, all right, if someone is an illegal immigrant and they have committed a crime, send them back to their country and let them do the time there. Don't have the U.S. taxpayer pay for their room and board for X number of years and then send them back. If they're going to, first of all, if someone is in a federal prison or in prison, if they know that all that's going to happen to them is get deported, why would they not be trying to escape every day? What's the answer, gentlemen? Do we have quorum on this? Do we have agreement on this?
We brought the forces together? On the surface, what you're describing sounds ridiculous, but you could also argue if we deported him right away, that illegal immigrant could use his creative means to get back into the country and commit the same crime, and then we would have to try him again for a crime that we can't. Be double jeopardy.
I think something that would be maybe a wiser choice would be let us have. Remember, I suggested that we have a United States Mexican sort of employment agency.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Remember that brilliant idea I had about a year ago.
So you have a binational prison system.
It may be Mexico. Maybe we have the same need for Canada. But what I'm saying is, if there was a jointly constructed U.S.-Mexican prison somewhere deep in Mexico, not within 100, kilometers of, the border, put them deep in the country of Mexico. It's a U.S.-Mexican-built prison. And if you are an illegal immigrant and you have committed a crime above and beyond the crime of sneaking in the country, I mean, you've robbed someone, you've done something, federal, state, whatever the case may be, you are sent to Mexico. You serve your time in a Mexican-run prison built with U.S. tax dollars, at least initially. And you know what? It's then up to the Mexican government to keep their criminals and to deal with them.
That's where the idea unravels, I think, there.
Why? See,
if you're asking the Mexican government to pony up for a new prison system, I just don't see it happening.
I say that we would help them. This would be something that, again, some people would say you wouldn't contribute to it. What I'm saying is you measure the cost of that against what's happening now. An illegal immigrant in a U.S. prison system is being paid for by taxpayers right now, and they are only deported once they have served their time. Mr. Tea Party, where does the Tea Party come down on this important issue? We're dealing with deals now.
Yeah,
this
is real stuff. Yeah, I don't know. This seems like hypothetical stuff to me.
It's so not hypothetical. Where do you come down on it? It's not hypothetical.
Well, I mean, as much as Dan likes to make us out to be, I think he used the term anti-immigrant. Yeah. I think we are a nation of laws, and unfortunately, the laws are if you do a crime in this country, then you're convicted and you're going to be in the jail system in this country.
Why?
Now,
why?
What we need to do is do what we're supposed to do.
Let's think beyond the box.
Well, how about just keeping them from coming in, illegals?
You can't do that. That's a completely different policy.
Then we lost there.
Am I getting any support at this table for this? How about the progressive?
I'm not sure it's true. I think that.
Oh, you think I'm making this up?
Yeah. No, I mean I'm trying to bring some facts into the debate. So
because no one else is.
No, progressives were the reality based party, right? We actually fix things in the government. We make life better. We don't have good talking points. That's what the Republicans have.
And behind 9.2% unemployment.
But I understand that ICE actually deports people once they get into the criminal system, once you do a fingerprint. And so at that point, they can deport people that they find to be undocumented immigrants.
But here's my point. It's not the undocumented. In other words, that crime is that they're undocumented.
Right.
I am talking about people who have committed crimes in the United States.
Understood.
All I'm saying is, why should we as taxpayers pay for their room and board here if when they're at the end of their sentence, they're going to be deported anyway? I say do it now, do it early, help the Mexicans build the prison, and send them there right away.
I agree with the principle. I think the more cooperation we have with Mexican government, the better off we're both going to be.
All right. Tom in Youngstown, Ohio. I was there last week in beautiful Boardman listening to us on WKBN. I'm coming back to Ohio, by the way. That hot debate that you had last week on our show from Senate Bill 5, I'm going to be back there before in November. Go ahead.
Great. Hey, Bruce, I know your discussion is on the Republican candidates right now, but I want to change the focus if I can.
Sure.
A bit. I've heard a number of pundits say that the Republicans may well pick up seats in both the House and the Senate because of retirements, as things even stand right now. If Obama keeps going down in the polls, what are your... what's your opinion, your guest's opinion, of chances of a backroom deal replacing Obama, say, with Hillary Clinton?
Zero.
And she then would appoint Obama as her first nominee for the Supreme Court if there was an opening.
I'd say the chances of that would be zero. I would also say that it's hard to see how Republicans make gains in the House. 2010 was a high water mark. And it's hard to see where they pick up some seats. In the Senate, I'll be the first to concede the 2012 map is a tough one for Democrats. So it'll be hard for us to hold on to the majority.
If Barack Obama was white, would you give me the same answer?
Yeah. There's no primary challenge. There's no drumbeat to replace him.
There is no challenge. There is no primary challenge. But isn't the principal reason, because there have been challenges to incumbent Democratic presidents challenging them for re-election. That's not necessarily news. That's historically been done.
Yeah, it happens
but
a lot.
But isn't the reason why that would not happen is because of the strength of the black electorate and their importance to the Democratic Party, and it would not be – they would not want it to – they, the party, would not want to be perceived that they were pushing a black man out of the presidency.
Well, I would say, look, African-Americans are a key constituency in the Democratic primary. However – I don't think you're going to ascribe it Barack's lack of a primary challenge to that, because where's the Democratic constituency that wants to challenge the president? Our progressives, well, you know, we're not delighted, but we consider him one of us. And, you know, once the Republicans took over, what are you going to do? Is it the conservative? You know, no. I mean,
Maxine Waters, when she complains about that he's not spending enough time in black communities, that doesn't mean anything, because the reality is he can get away with it. He doesn't have to spend his time there. It's more important to him to spend time in communities where he thinks he can get some independent voters.
Well, that's...
It's like anything else. Same thing with Republicans.
Absolutely.
Republicans,
and
you know...
And look, because...
Lip service to the base, right?
Well, because there's no primary challenge, we are, you know, looking to November already. And that's great for us, and it's a problem for Republicans.
You're raising all kinds of money.
And, you know, I just want to point out, and I was thinking earlier when we were talking about the different candidates and the wide range of views that are starting to appear in the Republican primary, and then you look in contrast to what's happening on the Democratic side, a failing president, an abysmal record since he got in, and yet nobody's there to stand up and have any kind of different views. You know why? Because there are none.
Yeah,
and that's what you're stuck with.
Because we're delighted with his record, and you're welcome for saving us from a Great Depression. You're welcome.
You don't necessarily need a primary challenge. Obama's weakened as it is with the economy. Right. And look at George H.W. Bush in 1988 versus 1992. His base was disaffected. People stayed home. Obama's lost ground with Latinos. The Black Caucus, he's in very hot water with the Black Caucus right now in Congress. He's lost numbers with African Americans.
Progressives.
We've been downgraded for the first time in American history, and despite a $1 trillion stimulus.
That's a Tea Party downgrade.
Despite a $1 trillion stimulus.
The biggest tax cut in history in the stimulus.
Unemployment above 9%.
David in Eureka, California on KGOE. Go ahead.
Howdy. Okay, the American people, through their Congress, voted down the DREAM Act. Last week, President Obama and his people, government, kind of backdoor reinstated it against the will of the people. There has not been any of the people running for the Republican nomination that I've heard stand up in outrage against. Therefore, none of those people have my vote. They might as well pack up and just go home. And when you take the 300,000 people that he just right off the bat says we're going to give work permits to, you add that to the 400,000 jobs lost last week, and 300. We lost 700,000 jobs last week.
Well, can I ask you, sir, how do you respond to President Obama's record of having far more deportations than President Bush? Do you give him any credit for that?
What does it have to do with
jobs?
He
wiped it all out. He just took it all away by going backdoor around Congress and around the American people. So none of that counts anymore.
Really? I mean,
yeah, he made a try, but he didn't get his way. Louis Gutierrez, everybody didn't get their way, so they just took their ball and they're going to play their own game over there.
But those numbers are tiny compared to the record deportations. We at least acknowledge that.
If we got an E-Verify system, the numbers should go up to about 1 million a year deportation. It'd take us,
we're about 1 million now.
No, we're not.
That's where we're at.
We pass out work permits to left and right. Visa for this. You get spousal abuse, you get a visa for this.
We're going to check it out during the break. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. Wherever you're listening, from coast to coast and border to border, on America's great highways, byways, the back roads, the drive-ins, wherever you are, give us a call, 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago again. For those that have just tuned in, if you are a Ron Paul supporter and you'd like Ron Paul on this program, we've invited him in the past. He's been a little reluctant. Send a little message to ronpaul.com. Tell them that you would like to hear Ron Paul on with Bruce Dumont on Sunday night on Beyond the Beltway. We will continue to press him to be on the program. For the gentleman that called a little bit earlier that said that the media perhaps was being unfair to Ron Paul, he wasn't getting his opportunity. Again, the opportunity is here every Sunday night. That is, by the way, for every candidate. But again, the Ron Paul people think that somehow the media is not treating him well. Patty in Wilmette, Illinois, is with us right now. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say two things. One, the gentleman, I think it was Mr. Weinberger, that said that George Bush was very arrogant. I supported George Bush, and I did not vote for Obama, but I think that I wished him well. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody more arrogant and condescending towards the American people. George Bush was not that.
In what way? Give us an example of
I remember a couple weeks ago he said that the American people just didn't understand this debt ceiling. Baloney. You run a household, you understand a debt ceiling pretty well. You are limited by what money you make.
Right, and a government is not a household. It's a baloney analogy because a government is here to stimulate the standard of living and the economy for everybody, just like you get a mortgage, and so you have debt beyond your means to pay it. Similarly, in a government, we spend more in order to make our citizens better off.
Well, I just think we disagree on how you do that. You know, Democrats want to use the government to do it, and Republicans want to use private industry. But my other point is, with Obama's low polls, I think those are far more telling than George Bush's were, because George Bush's, I think, partly were the press, the mainstream media, just pounded Bush and pounded Bush and pounded Bush. Barack Obama's poll, he's gotten there on his own, and I think it's going to be a very telling election.
That's a good point.
I would agree. Ma'am, I would agree with you. I'd say in spite of the press trying to prop this man up. So.
Yeah, I really agree that it's him doing it to himself, where George Bush, he didn't do it. He did it. Yes, he did. But it was also the press beating on the idea, too.
All right, very good. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Mark in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. You're next.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my phone call.
Good.
I've got a couple points. One, this immigration thing, and I'm a big believer in focus on the most effective way of handling things, not picking apart. I mean, the idea of even starting a conversation about sending criminals to Mexico is absurd. It's absurd. Start with the actual problem. The problem is we have illegal immigrants coming into this country every day. The problem is it's extremely easy for illegal immigrants to get paperwork. I own a business. I own a small business in Texas. Okay. It's a landscape lawn care irrigation business. It's fairly successful. I hire illegal immigrants every day without knowing. They come with paperwork that's absolutely fantastic. They come with cards that are beautiful, everything. And then I get a paper from the IRS 2 years later telling me the person was an illegal immigrant. I hire this person as a day labor contractor because it's the easiest way to do it. They don't want to be hired as a W-2 because they know they're never going to have to pay their 1099. And it's not my responsibility to check in with the IRS gov to find out if it's a legitimate piece of paperwork, as long as I'm taking copies and making sure they have the paperwork. I don't like hiring illegals. They're my best employees. Or the locals. They're my best employees. Why in the world is it legal for me to hire employees as a contractor and not tax them? Why don't they have to pay taxes? Why do we even allow that option? If we remove that option, they will pay their taxes, they will support themselves being here, and then who cares if they go to our prison?
So you're saying that somebody that you hire to do a particular job, you hire out as a 1099 instead of a W-2 employee?
Of course.
So I think...
Of course I do.
So I believe what federal law requires, and I think it's a three-point test, that if you tell somebody what to do, then they're an employee. It's a W-2. And
no, incorrect. Absolutely incorrect. Check with the IRS. If I want to hire a contractor, especially a day labor contractor, or a contractor in general, I have the set amount of money that I need to pay them. These people, as long as they're not a regular employee that works a regular 32 to 40-hour-a-week job, that is set on what I'm going to pay. Hey, I'm going to pay you $100 today. That person is legally a contract employee, 100%.
So another
and again, I've been in business for 7.5 years. I am absolutely 100% sure on that.
Okay, I mean, I've done some of the legal work on that too. So there could be some nuance there. However, what I hear you saying is that one of the ways to help on the immigration problem is to tighten up the employment requirements to have people start treating people like a W-2 employee instead of a 1099 employee. Because what I hear you saying is treating people like a 1099 allows for the undocumented to get work without paying.
Absolutely. And they get to make more money than my regular W-2 employees that are taxed, or even my 1099 employees that pay their 1099 tax. I have Hispanic and Caucasian employees that are been with me for years that I know for a fact are legals. That pay their taxes. I mean, they're good people. They pay their taxes. And they make less money than my people who show me valid paperwork but don't have to pay their taxes in the year because they're going to go back to Mexico.
Before we go, the theme song is playing, so I need a 15-second answer. Your opinion of Rick Perry. What should the rest of the people around the country know about him?
Okay, last little bit here. I will vote for Rick Perry only because I'm not a believer in Mitt Romney at all. I think he's a Marxist hiding as a Republican, and same thing with Obama. But Perry's got a lot of problems. His small business support is weak. His immigration laws are incredibly weak. His taxation rates are ridiculous. There's things he does not do for our state that people think Texas is doing well on. And Texas is doing well because we have a lot of oil.
Mark, do me a favor. I'm going to put you on hold. Dan Dorfman, our producer, is going to put you on hold. I want to get your name and number. I'd like to continue this conversation next week. You got a lot of interesting insight. We'd like to hear more of it, okay? Thanks very much. On that note, we are out of time for this week. Chris Baronis has been our Republican. Dan Johnson Weinberger has been carrying the flag for the Democratic Party and the Progressives. And Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Krilaitis has been our man in the middle with the Tea Party banner. This program's a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Genevieve Productions. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz, Fritz Goldman, Dan Dorfman, Sylvia Chavez, Mark Goldman, Mark Glickman, everybody. Until next week, Bruce Dumont, so long from Chicago.